Blog Talk Radio.
It's March 18th, 2013, and this is Foxology. I am your host, Silver Ray Fox. Happy Monday! Well, howdy, y'all, as we say down here in Texas. I hope your day is looking good. I hope you're looking optimistically forward to the events of the rest of your day. I know, even when stuff isn't so good, try to stay optimistic. Things seem to work out much better when you do. I know there's something about looking sour-faced and having nothing but negative things to say that just makes everything seem a lot worse. So I say away with that. You know, all of us have been around long enough to know that each day comes with its own issues and drama and problems. So you can choose to be on ready, or you can choose to run, hide, and complain. I say put your best face forward and say to yourself, I'm going in. Handle everything you can, and whatever you can't handle, let it be. Some things you just have to let them take care of themselves, and you have to take care of you. So be optimistic as you can. I always say this, things work out best when you make the best of how things work out. I've used that quote for years and years and years. I think they are great words to live by. Yes, they are. Well, you know this already, but this month celebrates and honors women, the history, achievements, and milestones of women. You know why? I'm glad you asked, because we're so fierce. So a few decades ago, it was set in stone by Congress that March would be our month. So it is just so befitting that we should talk about us today. Our courses in life, our convictions, our confidence, and our courage, because truly we have come a long way. Today, my special guest is Talisha Berry. Talisha is an accomplished actress, playwright, author, and the editor-in-chief of the Courageous Woman magazine. It's an online magazine dedicated to encouraging women to fly, something she knows a lot about. How you doing, Talisha?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Well, first thing I want to know is what altitude you're at today.
I'm flying.
I know you are.
I'm flying.
I know. That's always good. Have plenty to do, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
for
never
sure.
For
moment.
Sure. I know, but you know what? We'd be complaining if it was different than that, wouldn't we?
Oh, yeah, we would. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, I know you're just kind of cruising at a different level after being really way up in the stratosphere with a project that you just completed. Why don't we start by talking about that? You had a lot of stuff going on in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. I launched my first novel, The Baptist Junkie, and I had a big launch party, celebration, gospel concert in Flint, Michigan with Deidre Catton, Jessica Reedy, and quite a few local artists from the Flint, Michigan area.
So those are big names.
Oh, yeah. We had a good time.
And so with that event, was that centered around, was that a part of the book launch? Did it tie in somehow? Or were they two different
Oh, yeah.
Things?
Yeah, instead of just doing a launch party, I wanted to do a gospel concert with gospel music and the gospel industry, doing gospel plays. It was all part of my history and my background, so I wanted to include some of my gospel singing friends and put together a little celebration with a concert.
Well, it sounds like it was a big celebration, but speaking of your history, here's what I want to know. I know you are an actress. You've got some background in that. Tell me and our audience about how you got started in acting and how that ultimately took you to the place of being a playwright.
Well, I started as a as a kid, actually, a kid in the Flint, Michigan area. I began doing local productions and the local theater there, McCree Theater, and then there was high school. I did high school plays, and it was a great desire of mine to act professionally. So I got an opportunity to travel with several gospel plays, and that really inspired me I was already a writer, but it really inspired me to write and produce my own productions. Learning as I was acting, I was learning how to put together and how to produce plays. So when the tour was over, my husband and I began to produce our own productions.
Well, how challenging was that? I mean, you make it sound easy. I was an actress, so now I'm going to be a playwright and produce my own play. Well, that sounds like a good plan, but that had to be a great challenge to take on. What did you do? Did you already
have a
following that was already created that made it a little simpler?
Well, a lot of plays, the producer that I work with, Michael Matthews, had done some plays in the area where I was living, and so it made it a little bit easier, so it wasn't something that was totally new. And there was a need for entertainment and African-American entertainment, so my following became the church. So it was a gospel play, so it was a community effort and community support, and it helped me a lot. Helped me to build a following.
So, did you actually start then with your productions right inside your church?
No, not necessarily. Not exactly in my church. Just in my community. The plays we cast the plays with actors and singers from different churches. So it wasn't necessarily people from my church, per se, with community.
Well, I know your first two plays were Wake Up and Wake Up 2, and I'm just guessing, but I'm thinking that has something to do with some spiritual backdrop. Tell us about that.
Oh, yeah. It was anti-drug, a musical. And at the time when we did those plays, our communities, and not only in Flint community, but all over, were dealing with drug issues and community issues with drug sales, drug use, and it was a major social issue. And it was very, very supported. I got a lot of support because of the message of the play.
What was the essential message for you as a writer?
I was just trying to encourage people to look to other opportunities, other avenues, as opposed to selling drugs. It was a youth. Those two plays were mostly youth oriented. So my message was to the young people, because those plays were many years ago. So I was young at the time too, and I had lost quite a few of my own friends and family members to violence regarding drug use and drug sales, and even I have a younger brother that was killed actually as a result of drug and gun violence. So there were strong messages. It was personal for me.
Yes, of course, of course, of course. And I'm assuming you said it was very well received. So that means then that it was quite successful, and I'm going to get to that because I know your new book has a certain emphasis in that area too. But before we do, after those two ventures, you also produced Hair Weave.
Oh, yeah. It was a comedy play, a comedy musical. I wanted to kind of show a little bit of versatility in my writing. I wanted to do something that was lighter. And that was fun, and it involved a lot of comedians from all over, and even Mike Epps, when he before he became Mike Epps, the big movie star, he was actually in one of my plays, so that was fun.
Yeah. Well, what was the storyline in Hair Weave?
Pretty much, it was about a young lady who wanted to impress a guy, and she wanted to. And she had friends who were all wearing hair extensions, and they were doing all these extra things with their hair and makeup and nails and everything to impress. And they were trying to teach her how to impress men to get a certain type of guy. But he really wasn't impressed with that. He wanted a nice, natural girl, but she didn't understand that. She was pretty. He liked her the way she was. But she went through this complete transformation, and he didn't know who she was. So it was pretty funny.
Oh, my goodness. That sounds like that was fun. That's fun. Do you think you'll ever consider bringing those plays back to life? They all sound so worthy.
You know, it's been talked that it's a possibility that we will do them for DVD purposes. To put them out there so they'll get an opportunity for people all over to get a chance to see some of those plays.
I hope you do. Well, I know that you're one of your most recent projects, and I've had the honor to give a couple of submissions you invited me to over the past year and a half, and it's just such an honor. You are the editor-in-chief behind Courageous Woman magazine. I want to know, what was the inspiration for you, with all that you already do, to launch an online project that I am sure you're probably still in the baby stages of that? There's so much more to do and grow, I'm sure of it. But tell us how you got that inspiration and some of the things that you have planned.
Oh yeah, it's still in the baby stages. It's been up a while, but we're still moving forward and taking small steps with that. But Courageous Woman magazine, I was inspired to do that because for me, I'm always looking for inspiration myself and looking online for different inspirational stories. I've always been motivated by hearing other women stories that may have had some adversities and just overcoming things. And those stories always inspired me. So I always look for those type of stories. And so I just decided to find a lot of, I would come across a lot of those different stories. And I wanted to find out how I could create a magazine of just inspiring stories for women. So that's pretty much how it started.
Mm-hmm. And where are you going with that? I know that, and I say that with this question in mind as well. You know, as women, in our you know, the things we've done have just been exponential over the years. And when I think of your magazine and knowing that it is in the baby stage, although I think it's beautiful and your concept is really has come to life. When I think of conferences and, you know, we talked a little bit about it. I know you're thinking about your own radio show in conjunction with it.
Yeah, I'm considering doing a radio show locally, actually. And we're trying to go into more event focus to where we would do a lot of events around the country with Courageous Woman. We'll continue to do the online version, and sometimes I will do special edition print version. I'm actually working on a print version right now, but it'll be a local version, a local edition rather, where we're in Michigan, where I am from. Where I work on several printed special editions.
Well, I'll be looking forward to getting that stuff posted online as well. Well, let me ask you, in keeping with the honoring women for this month, and your byline says encouraging women to fly, Courageous Women's Magazine, encouraging women to fly. What do you think about the whole concept of the sky being the limit for women? Do you think that we're where we're going? Do you think there's still a whole lot more? What are your thoughts on where we've come and what's ahead?
I think we have come so far as women, and I think the sky really is the limit, and if we could get past a lot of those fears that so many of us have. I still have some myself sometimes. And to know that the sky really is a limit, and we can achieve anything that we desire, anything that we dream, anything we believe, that it's possible. And to step out of the box and overcome those fears, no matter how big it is, we have to believe that we can do it. And I totally believe in that, that whatever it is, we can do it.
I wonder why, and I suppose there have been times in my life that I felt fears and hesitancies about moving forward and doing things. Honestly, I don't remember so much. I've always been a pretty high risk taker and willing to go ahead and see if something would work. I have a friend that she always says, "You just are not afraid of anything." And I thought to myself, well, I guess I'm glad I'm not, because from what I can tell, the worst thing that could happen is maybe it won't work or you fail, and then all you do is dust yourself off and start
exactly.
over again. That's not such a, you know, I think at one time when things fell on their face or it didn't work or you failed, it used to be, you know, people look down on it so much. But once I got smart enough to really get in line with some of the big thinkers and the things that they're doing and saying, all of them say they failed, and they fail numerous times, and it's a part of the process. And once you do get hold of that and really understand that, you know that there's just not always going to be, if ever, a smooth sailing toward wherever it is you're going. And you learn so much during those times where it gets difficult or where you have to rethink it or it fell apart and you had to, you know, either put the pieces back together again or start rebuilding something new.
Right.
And I personally feel, and professionally too, that those things continue, if you look at it from the right perspective, it just makes you into an incredible human being if you know how to process the information that comes from that growth and really utilize it in your head and in your heart. You just feel, you know, like, okay, now what's the next level when you start your next flight? You know, what's the next level?
Right.
So I encourage women who are listening to, you know, there used to be, well, there still is a saying, there's nothing to fear but fear itself. And when you realize that it's just a matter of, again, you know, picking up the pieces, starting over, doing it again, and you don't blame yourself, hate yourself, condemn yourself for any of that. You just go ahead until you get it like you want it. That's all it takes. But I love the fact that that's what you're encouraging with your magazine, that you're, you know, sharing the plights and the challenges and overcoming adversities and letting other women know that, yeah, you can do it. These women did it, and you can do it as well. And the sky truly is the limit. You know, I'm saying the sky's the limit, but they say now it's even beyond that, somewhere in the universe that you can go. But all of that's still true. There's just tremendous amounts of opportunities and levels to which we can take our hopes and dreams and aspirations. I want to ask you this. And again, this is in keeping with us, and this sort of kind of overcoming the fears and reservations that some women may face. I watched yesterday Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, and we chatted about this briefly. I told you that I would probably bring it up during our conversation. But Brené Brown brought up the concept of the authentic self. And I found that to be so fascinating to listen to. And I got, you know, several revelations as I listened, and I thought, well, maybe that is where a lot of the fear-based issues lie because inside a person, because you're really not sure about who you are or where you are and what you're doing when you're not being your true, authentic self. And it was just a real eye opener for me, from the perspective of things I like to talk about and I like to teach. But I asked you, and you brought up a perspective too about that you thought was really impacting women, and I'm going to say negatively, but we'll see how we can spin it. So would you share what you said when you were talking to me earlier?
Okay, if I can remember what I said.
Well, you were talking about the whole image thing.
Okay.
From media.
Well, from society, you know, what society deems as beautiful. Oftentimes we compare ourselves to what society says is beautiful. We go through so many transformations to try to enhance ourselves, comparing ourselves to other women, and from our hair to our whole, to going as far as surgeries, plastic surgeries, to change ourselves and spending money. And oftentimes they don't help. I mean, they may make us look a little better here and there, but it's about what you feel inside and how that's where you get the authentic part of how you really feel about yourself internally.
Yeah, it's a place. I can remember the first time I heard that, because when I was in school, I always studied psychology, and so. Mm-hmm. That was my first, face-to-face understanding of what the authentic self meant. And when the professor explained it more, I found myself sitting there and thinking, why would you even want to compare yourself to anybody else or be like, and I mean in the true sense of be like someone else, when it's so much effort just to be who you are without putting that in the formula of your own self-growth, when it really isn't self-growth. Not that there aren't people who lead us, guide us, mentor us, offer us information, inspire us, teach us. I'm not talking about that. But things like you're talking about, really trying to embrace a self that's not a real self,
mm-hmm.
You know, that can only produce a harder place of existence for a woman. But I just found it fascinating. And to that, I just tell, I say like you, be who you are. If you want to do things to enhance how you look, there's all kinds of ways to do that. But, be okay in your own skin. Seek to grow,
right.
Seek to learn, seek to develop in positive ways, but not because somebody else said it should be so, not because
right.
There's this media that says this is the only way that you can be perfect or okay or all right or accept it, because where that may have its validity in some ways, bottom line is it's your life to live. And it's,
right.
You know, the people often that we're taking into consideration will never see meet, never matter. You have to live your own life and who you are and understand that you are a totally wonderful human being, special, unique in your own ways, and really work that for yourself.
Right.
Well, let me ask you another question about something that you're doing. I said I would come back to that. Your book. Boy, what a title. Baptist Junkie.
Oh.
At first when I heard that, Talisha, I thought to myself, what you must mean is that there are women who are really addicted to church, or Jesus, or religion, or God. That's what I thought you meant when you said that, because, African-American women are known population-wise, from being the strongest, most fervent spiritual people on the face of the earth. So I thought for sure that's what you were talking about, but you're not. You're talking about a story of a woman who, a girl turned woman who really got off on the right track and wrong track and got herself involved with drugs. Tell us as much as you can about her story.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have thought the way you did about the book, the title, but really is it's a family drama, and it's about a young woman who, at 16, she got pregnant out of wedlock, and because of her father's religious views and thoughts of her being at that point, because she got pregnant, that she needed to marry the man, and he wasn't interested in marrying her, that she was ruined, that no one or no man would want her, and that her life was just ruined. And because of that, it kind of took her on an emotional tailspin. And she felt like, okay, if I'm ruined, I might as well do whatever now. And she got involved in drugs. She was raised in a religious family, so she knew the Lord, and she was raised that way. But she, because she made those decisions to go off into drugs and alcohol, she always thought about where she was from and wanted to get back there. But her life took her on a different journey. And at some point, she began to redeem herself. But only after she went through a lot of hell first.
So it sounds like in the story then, there will be a lot of revealing of how you think and feel about certain things. I know part of the promo, and you can go into this if you would, you mentioned that she made poor choices with friends, poor choices with men, and then, of course, getting in the drug scene. And I want to ask you, in a broader way, how you feel that reflects on women today as well. I've read some very interesting things and seen some things online about women still making poor choices in relationships, in friendships. Sometimes you just don't know. We still tend to be greatly trusting and hopefully smarter about staying away from the addiction and abuse that comes with drug use. But talk to us about her choices and why you painted that picture that way.
Well, because I know it's so relevant to so many women in real life. The story is, like I said, it's fiction, but it's based on a lot of true facts of people that I know. And oftentimes when you're young and you make a choice that others may see as a mistake or whatever, you find out that, you know, you made these decisions that may not have been good decisions, put it that way. And you get out and you see that, as a woman, you find out that, especially with men, you know, we make this particular young girl, she was young, put it that way. She was very young, and she didn't know. She was very naive. She was raised in the church, and her whole life she had been saying, you can't do this, you can't do this. The whole family was, you can't play cards, you can't gamble, you can't do all these different things that, sometimes part of life, you have to see those different things to know what's good and what's bad, but she didn't get a chance to see. She was excited about those type of things, and she didn't learn what wasn't the best thing for her. So when her father told her she was ruined, she went out and she began to explore the things that her father tried to keep her away from. And that's what got her into trouble and got her into dealing with men that were not good for her, because she was trying to find herself. She was trying to find love, and attention and validation. And oftentimes we do that. And sometimes when you don't have a father or a male figure that's important to giving you those things as a child, especially for some women, they go out and seek that from men, and it may not be the best choices.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions about what you just said. One of them, first off, is do you feel that the church still offers a significant amount of information that influences women in the way that you have just stated, and not that men are exempt from criticisms and all, but it seems that oftentimes women do get more attention and exploited differently. When you say her own father said she was ruined, and do you think we still get similar messages from the church that gauge the kind of attitudes we live and grow from that impact us in a way negatively like that?
I think things are a little bit different or a little bit better. I mean, this story is set in 1968, so at a time period where getting pregnant out of wedlock was a major issue, especially in the Baptist church. Now things are with young girls getting pregnant so regularly, and it having they have more opportunities now to, you know, take their children to school. It's become more prevalent, put it that way. It's more prevalent. And although there are churches that are still teaching about fornication and all those things, but it has become so well accepted now that it's not a stress for women as it was back in the 1960s. It was a stress for women because oftentimes in those times they would be sent away. If they had family, like a lot of women here, they had family in the South, the parents would send them away while they were pregnant so they wouldn't shame themselves or the family. And that's an issue also as well in the book.
So do you feel then, are you saying that the impact of the shame and the self-esteem has gone away?
No, I don't think that it has gone away. I think that it's more because it's so prevalent now that the shame, there's still some shame, but I'll be honest with you. I know some young women that it's just not a big thing anymore. I got pregnant. I'm going to have my baby. I'm having a baby shower. And it's amazing to me some of the, you know, I'm old-fashioned. I'm old school. But it's not as shameful as it was at one time, which it still leaves on us to be better teachers to our younger women and daughters, that they should focus on education and focus on saving themselves for a good man. But that's not, honestly, that's not so well taught nowadays, because I work with a lot of young people and just their ideas and concepts are so different than the way we were raised.
Well, having a baby as a teenager certainly makes things a lot harder, but I am glad to hear that it's being dealt with in a way that it doesn't destroy, you know, that the church isn't acting to destroy their self-esteem and, you know, bring shame to them. You know, it's like you said, there's a certain commonness about it, whether it's right or wrong, it is what it is. And, you know, you can opt to be supportive and help them regain direction. And that, to me, of course, is the best course of action to take. I want to ask you another kind of heavy-duty question. You mentioned in your descriptive of Brenda, the woman in your story, about making poor choices about men. And I tell you, if I see one more story about that online, it's, you know, I just shake my head. And it's not because I'm certainly no relationship therapist, and nor have I always won in a relationship, meaning coming out with the winning one. But it just really, I find it so challenging to understand that women have such a difficult time in a relationship or staying in one or realizing when somebody's not good for them. I mean, there are obvious signs when a guy's not a good guy, or he's not, he doesn't have your best interest at heart, or he's not supportive of you, or he doesn't love you. I mean, they're real obvious signs. And, you know, my theory is, you know, don't do that. don't stay.
Right.
Don't try to make it something that it's not once you know. You know, I don't think you can make somebody love you if they really don't. And I don't think you can, you know, make a guy be a certain way toward you if he hasn't made the decision that he wants to treat you like a queen. And I guess my answer to all of that would be is just don't allow it. Don't pretend that it's something that it's not. Love yourself first and foremost. And if you can't teach him better ways, if he's not open to that, or you know, understanding what it is to bring value and treat you with value, then you just need to swallow hard and hold on to your heart and keep on moving. But in your story,
yeah.
Let's talk about that. Does she face that kind of dilemma?
Yeah, and it all boils down to self-esteem. Because her self-esteem was challenged because she got pregnant out of wedlock, and the things that her father said to her, he told her, now you're ruined, and it stuck. It made an impact in her life that she really felt this way because it was said to her. And she carried on this, and her whole being, her whole attitude about herself was that I'm not so worthy. So because of how she felt about herself, and that's the thing, when we don't feel good about ourselves, we allow certain things to occur in our lives, and mostly with men. And it boils down to how we feel about ourselves. Certain women will allow certain things to happen. Then there are certain women that I won't, you know, they'll tell you, I will never do this, I'll never do that. And it just boils down to how they were raised or how what type of self-esteem do they have, what type of person they are. And that's the bottom line. We have to begin to focus on being healthy mentally, emotionally, and when
mm-hmm.
we're totally healthy, certain things we won't even attract.
That's true.
That's the bottom line.
So in her case, she was looking for love in all the wrong places, like a lot of women do. But I think if you find out you're in the wrong place, then get out of Dodge.
Right.
Again,
right.
Just, you know, get your stuff and get out of that. Don't allow anybody to mistreat you or disrespect you or treat you less than like you are the queen that you are. Well, I want to ask you one more question before we wrap up, and I did mention this to you earlier as well. What would be some things that you would like to, in addition to all that we have said, and maybe you said some of it and you'll just be repeating it, but what would you like to say to women with being in honor of this being Women's Month, Women's History Month, to keep them inspired and moving on to bigger and better things?
I would say take some time to focus on thyself, to thy own self be true. You know, sometimes we get so wrapped up in our jobs or our families, our kids, and all the other duties that we have for other people. And sometimes we need to just take a minute, step back, and realize what are some of the things that we want, some of our desires, some of our dreams, our aspirations, things that we have kind of set back and we just think about. You know, I have a lot of things in myself that just marinate in my head. When you have those type of things, and I just honestly feel that if something that's been laid on your heart, there's something you need to do. If it's in your mind, there's something that you need to do. But you got to step out there. You got to take a leap of faith and step out of the box and just go for it. You know, no matter how unlikely it may seem, it's possible. If you, I'm a strong believer. If you can believe it, if you can dream it, you can achieve it. Just go for it. Whatever it is, just take a leap. Sometimes it's about timing. And you have to realize when that right time is and go for it.
Well, I'll say amen to that. Absolutely. Can you tell us, tell everybody, I did put those links on the Blog Talk Radio site, but tell everybody how they can get Baptist Junkie and how they can access CW Magazine.
You can access CW Magazine at www.CourageousWomanMag.com, and for my website where you can learn about the book, The Baptist Junkie, is at www.TalishaBerry.com. The book is also available on Amazon.com.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you so much, Courageous, Awesome Woman, for being with me today, and I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and it was just as good as I thought it would be. So thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and sharing your life via Courageous Woman Magazine to give us all an opportunity to learn and grow and be better women through the inspirations of others. Appreciate you for that. I wish you much continued success, and I'm going to look forward to talking to you again sometime soon.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all your contributions. I appreciate you so much. Thank you for allowing me to come on your show today. Thank you.
Likewise. You enjoy your day. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And I want to thank you all for hanging in there with me today. What a conversation, huh? Great one. In honor of women. Yes, because we are so fabulous, fantastic, and fierce. So I want you all to make it a great day. I hope you will tell others about Foxology. It airs at 12:30 Eastern Standard Time on Mondays. So tell your friends on Facebook and email others and tweet it and do that for me if you would, please. And I want to thank all of you. I just have so many hundreds of you who are downloading these shows to listen, and that just excites my heart and lets me know that I am on the right path. So thank you. Keep on roaring, keep on soaring, and keep on rising and celebrating yourself this month and every day. Thank you so much for listening.